Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell. Today, as we record this, is Monday, February 23rd, 2015. .NET members are going to get the first listen to this, and then it's going to be available to everybody on the All Access side a little bit later in the week. So if you're on the All Access side wondering, I can only post one thing at blogtalkradio.com, and I've got the live show tonight, so you're going to hear this on a little bit of a delay. That said, it is my pleasure to be joined by WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross, who is back with us, and he is promoting the Ringside, an afternoon with Jim Ross on Saturday, March 28th, Rock Bar Theater in San Jose, California. Tickets on sale now at ticketweb.com and the Rock Bar Theater box office. Obviously, Jim, it's WrestleMania weekend and a lot to choose from. You've made this very convenient for people with the show starting early in the afternoon so people can make the WWE Hall of Fame. And tickets start at $20, VIP meet and greet, $65. I'm actually going to ask a question somebody sent me. I'll leave their name out of it. This person said there's only 100 VIP meet and greet tickets. He wants to buy two for himself. Should he buy two more and try to make a little extra cash on the side by selling them once he gets down to California?
Oh, well, if he's got the entrepreneurial spirit, I'd say have at it. It's not going to bother me any. I know that the we earmarked 100 so that we could do it in a comfortable amount of time. I'm not big on herding the fans through like cattle or not having any interaction with them. It's just not my deal. So I generally leave a little bit more time than we actually need for the meet and greet, but we're going to hold it to 100 tickets. And I think we have much less than half of those remaining. So if somebody's thinking about wanting to do the meet and greet, the photo op, and the you can get your memorabilia personalized, all that good stuff, then you might want to pull the trigger on that transaction. If not, there's plenty of those $20 tickets available. And they will also be available at the venue the day of the event. So, but the online deal is the way to go because you can print your own ticket. You're done. It's easy. So that would be my suggestion. For that guy, hey, have at it. You can buy them all if you want. If you can sell them, good for you.
And with being WrestleMania weekend, do you go in with a little bit more of a gotta have the game face on? Obviously the most diehard wrestling fans will be some locals too, I'm sure, but all the fans coming from around the world, many of which have maybe even caught your show in their home market before.
Yeah, some of them probably have, but it's been a while. The show's changed a lot since then. But the nice thing, Jason, about the show, even if you've seen it before, it's always going to have a different feel, and it's always going to have different content because of the question and answer portion of the show makes up for the biggest part of the show. So the Q&A's always change, so it's always different. But, yeah, you know, I'll be hopefully at my best. You know, it's a matinee that we had to kind of find a place that we fit. And, you know, Foley's got a show in Frisco on Thursday night. Last year we had our shows at the House of Blues on Thursday, did two of them. And they did well, which we're grateful, but, you know, I had to find a spot that we could fit. And Saturday afternoon at that time seemed to work out pretty good because you're only like 7 to 10 minutes away from the arena where the Hall of Fame is going to be held from where we're doing our show. So getting out of there at 3 o'clock, I'm thinking that the Hall of Fame is going to start about 5. And then it gives you ample time to grab something to eat or go to your hotel and change clothes or whatever you choose to do. But I think it all works time-wise.
Yeah, it should make for a heck of an afternoon for people who want to try to catch both, and it's something I would, if I were in the area, I would definitely be attending. Again, ticketweb.com is the place to go for your tickets, or as JR said, available at the door. I wouldn't take any chances if it were me, and I wanted to make sure I saw this show, and jump on those VIP tickets while they last, $65 for those, $20 for the general admission, and I don't expect you to drop any names here, but I know you're pretty Your past shows have had some surprise guests, I would imagine, with WrestleMania weekend. You're going to have a few people to choose from.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting topic. I kind of created a monster in that. I wish I hadn't, I'd be honest with you. Because now it's like, okay, the afternoon with Jim Ross show is not enough. We got who else you got to bring? Nothing's, you know, it's just it's a sign of the times that we live in. I started it, you know, on a whim, because, you know, I think the first time I did it was in WrestleMania, actually, I think, with Cornette and Austin. But they both just wanted to come to the show and see the show, and I booked them to do a run-in on my Q&As, basically. But now everybody's, well, I had a guy tweet and said, when are you going to announce your surprise guest? Excuse me? When are you going to announce your surprise guest? I don't know something about that sentence doesn't work for me. I don't think you announce surprise guests. I think they remain surprises until you bring them on stage. At least that's the idea. So you're right. There's a ton of guys out there, and I have been contacted by some talents that would like to come by, and you know, I would tell you honestly, straightforward, 100% truthful. As we speak, I have no earthly idea. I don't even have the MC yet penciled in. We're still working on that. This deal just came about last week, so I mean, we've just been trying to find a venue and a promoter and get our tickets on sale and all those things and all the other stuff like the MC and the special guest or guests are not done yet. But neither role is going to be hard to fill. It's just a matter of you know, making a call and having some fun, and maybe I even have an idea when I get there that makes it more unique. So I don't know. We'll see. But I think I've created kind of everybody's spoiled, you know. I was going to Jersey about a month ago, and that sleet and snow and stuff, and I wasn't going to have a guest. I didn't think there'd be enough people there to worry about, and because of the weather, the roads were horrible, and we had a really good house for the weather. It was really good. Very lucky. I wouldn't have got out to go see me or anybody else in that weather, I can tell you that. But Sean Waltman got a hold of me and said, hey, I'm going to be in your neck of the woods. Can I come by the show? And, you know, she said, yeah, you can come by the show. So I put him to work. And then I had JJ, Court Bauer had suggested JJ, and I had thinking of somebody to use on in Philly at the Rumble Day. And JJ lives in Delaware, so he's right there. So he was happy to come up. And, you know, I set up the merch table. He sold some pictures. He sold some books. He was happy. He got to, you know, the fans were great. They gave him a standing ovation. So that worked out well. But they are all like whatever works. You know, who's here and who's there and who wants to do it. And so I kind of, like I said, though, I wish, in a way, I wish people would think that who's going to be your guest? Well, if I want everybody to know, I would look at it early and I would advertise it and try to sell tickets off of it.
Exactly.
You know, but I really don't know as we speak. Same goes for the, as I mentioned, goes for the MC. You know, it'll all work out. You know, I don't sound like I'm flippant about it, but I just know that it's all going to work out. Neither of those issues are that stressful or hard to take care of.
We're getting a little bit of crackling on my end, so I'm going to call Jim right back, and hopefully that'll clear it right up. Maybe it's the phone lines in Oklahoma, Jim. They're not used to this snow and ice you're getting down there.
Could be. It could be the cans are frozen over.
All right. Well, I'll give you a buzz right back, Jim.
All right.
All right. We're talking the day after WWE Fastlane, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because I know you are getting together with Shane Hurricane Helms to discuss the show in great detail on the Ross Report. I just did 40-plus minutes for .NET members on Sunday night as well. But I just I don't want you to have to repeat yourself when you're talking with Shane, but I wanted to just kind of get your overall thoughts on the show. Basically, I guess the biggest question that coming out is, are they on the right track now with Roman Reigns going into WrestleMania?
Well, you know, gosh, I don't know. I really don't know. I think that it's certainly being very much, I don't want to say overthought, but certainly a great deal of thought is being given by fans on the Roman Reigns situation. A lot of it's going to depend in the next 4 or 5 weeks on how he's presented on television and how well he delivers. You know, I applaud WWE for having a plan, making a plan that took some long-term planning and then sticking with it. And I think that's a great step for them to take. I think it's a little bit nostalgic because that's how the business used to be formulated, long-term planning. And so I'm happy to see them doing that. Now, whether Reigns is going to cut the mustard by the end of March, I have no idea. You know, I always thought when I signed down at SCW in Tampa before they moved to Orlando that he was the next guy from that group. Not necessarily the next guy, period, but from that group of people down in at that time in the developmental area, he was he would be your number one draft pick. But, you know, it's just hard to say when somebody's going to be absolutely ready. They're giving him every chance to be ready. A lot of it's going to be up to him and how he expands his game and improves and gets better at what he's doing, working on his in-ring skill set. So it's not all about the creative. It's not all about music. It's not all about your attire. At some point, the talent themselves have got to take on that responsibility of expanding their repertoire and getting better at their craft. I have every belief that he will do that. Is the timeline going to be conducive to answering your question accurately? I don't know. I don't know that. That's the key to this whole deal. And that's maybe a photo finish. I know this. Reigns had what I thought was a very good wrestling match with Daniel Bryan, which tells me that he can follow and can keep up, if for the lack of a better term. I thought their match was very solid last night. And, yes, a lot of that goes to Daniel Bryan for leading the match and establishing the pace and getting Reigns in the right position, whoever the agent was, the producer, whatever the name might be. But so that impressed me. He's very athletic, and I know he's got a commitment to it, Jason. He's, you know, you don't go from 310 or 320 and get yourself in good shape and getting away from the way that he had been eating, and his family and his people have been, they're big eaters. You know, they eat what they want. So that's, I know he's got it in him to work hard and will work hard. Man, is there enough time? We're going to find out the hard way when the bell rings.
If it were your call, how do you approach that match in terms of, with Reigns still being fairly green, and I mean, there's been talk that Brock is a guy that doesn't like to call in the ring. I don't know if that's you'd probably know more about that than I would. I mean, is this something where you take the Pat Patterson approach of laying out the match like he did for Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior back in the day, or do you think, no, these two are perfectly capable of going out there and you may lay out some key spots, but they're capable of doing their thing, and they're not going to need that much coaching?
I think that you have Paul Heyman involved in the planning a great deal, getting in the head of both guys. And I think both of them are athletic enough and competitive enough to rise to the occasion just simply because that's one of the great things about recruiting and signing guys from legitimate athletic backgrounds. These two guys are closing the show. They're going to be dependent upon to make sure that WrestleMania 31 is a good show, and oftentimes a good show is determined by the last thing you saw, rightly or wrongly. So I think that they'll have an outline of what they're going to do. I have no idea if Patterson's going to be involved. Wouldn't hurt my feelings if he was, because Pat does his matches pretty much based in logic. I think that's good. I'd say that they get a general outline and they go with it, because I'm not a big fan of memorizing or laying a match out, and especially in today. Now, when Pat laid out the Warrior Hogan match, at least Hogan had some had a lot of experience, and he was coachable. Warrior was less experienced and had less range, shall we say. But I'm not a big fan of laying everything out move for move unless you just absolutely have to. It's going to be a short match, because I just think that you've got to feel the crowd and what are they buying. And, we're going to force feed them this, and I don't know if that's a good idea. I think you got to feel what the crowd wants, because here's the deal. You lay it out one way, and what if you lay it out where Brock is the villain of the pair, and he's not? Okay, how does that affect your calling an audible, or how does that affect what you've laid out? Well, it obviously has an effect on it. So my theory is that you go out there and have an outline of how you're going to start and how you're going to finish, and then in the middle, you kind of let the crowd let the crowd be your GPS, if you know what I'm saying.
So. Absolutely. With Brock Lesnar, I mean, if he, we'll definitely get to his situation in a second, but if he is staying, you have the option of Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, or Seth Rollins be a Money in the Bank cash in. I'm just curious what you would do if this were your call.
Well, you asked, the good question is, what happens to Brock? Is Brock staying or is he going? Is he going to continue with WWE or is he going to go back? For the longest time, I thought that he was probably going to go back to USC and have another year, maybe a little more, maybe a couple of fights a year type thing. But I've lessened on my passion on that assumption. I think that, I know that I've heard rumors and talk scuttlebutt about that about Brock, but a lot of MMA guys are starting to worry about long-term CTE issues.
Right.
That's not unusual. I mean, why wouldn't they be worried about it? I mean, you see what's happened to some boxers when they're wearing 8-ounce or heavier gloves. One can only imagine what's going to happen when you've got a guy that's had a lot of fights wearing 4-ounce gloves. The chances of having your brain scramble increases, obviously. So I think that there's some concerns there, and with all those guys that have been in the ring and gotten out seemingly with everything intact. So I'm leaning more that Brock is staying. But you built this plan for Reigns, and I'm thinking that the WWE is going to move forward with their plan. I'm thinking that if Reigns, they've gone all this stuff with the Royal Rumble and now the Daniel Bryan match, and now then coming after WrestleMania, I am under the sense that Reigns will prevail. Could be dead wrong. I have no idea. I have no inside knowledge. But that's my thinking, that Reigns will prevail. And if the easy thing there is, to me, is very, very simple. If the crowd, you could have one finish where Reigns goes over if he's accepted as a babyface. You could have another finish where Reigns goes over and Heyman turns on Brock and becomes aligned with Reigns, which is not a bad thing for Reigns, quite frankly. So or not. You know, who knows? That's the, kind of the cool thing about this is that you don't really know exactly. But I think, based on what I've seen and the commitment to Reigns, that they seem to be willing to give it a try. And so I'm thinking he's going to become the WWE champion, which is probably not going to make some people happy. But, again, I'm still having a hard time figuring out the crowd in Memphis. I mean, I don't know why some of them are there, especially if it was colder than hell down there. And, you know, they had a big crowd. They were certainly not into the show at any point that I can recall. I might be wrong.
You know, Jim, I kind of blame WWE for that. I don't think they've given us a great product for the last few months. I mean, there's obviously ups and downs in there, too. But I was watching that show, and I just couldn't pick out too many times where I thought, you know, this is just a bad crowd. There were times when I just felt like the crowd's waiting for something to happen. And they got Orton right off the bat, and they were receptive then. But then I think they just kind of settled in, and they got bad finishes, and, you know, it's just some kind of ho-hum matches. I didn't think it was so much Memphis. It is just kind of a reflection of what the average WWE fan right now is thinking about that product.
Yeah, you might be right. I've always known the Memphis crowd to be good. And the times we were there, you know, I was there generally doing Raw with Lawler. So, you know, for us, coming out, it was always good because, you know, Jerry was the hometown hero and always got one of the biggest pops of the night when he was introduced. They still love the King of Memphis, which is good, as they should. But it didn't seem like from the early part of the show on that the crowd was as engaged as I thought they might be. And my point, I guess, is that why would you brave the weather and the high-dollar tickets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then not be more into the show? That was my only thought. And maybe it's easy to say, well, they didn't give the fans what they wanted, and the buildup was, like you said, the buildup on some of these things were less than sufficient. And in your point of view, I get that. But in any event, I thought the show was, a moderate show. I thought they had two or three things that they needed to get addressed during the nearly 3 hours that it was on the air. And Sting and Triple H, the Cena-Rusev treatment, how that was going to be done. And then, of course, Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. Those three things were really the three issues that were the focal point of that pay-per-view. And it seemed like all three of those matters got addressed in a – at least in my eyes, a decent point of view. Now, if you're of the case that, well, no matter what they did, if Daniel Bryan's not winning, I'm not liking it. I had a guy tweet me last night after the second match and said, well, this one's, I might as well turn the channel. This is not going to be a good pay-per-view. And he knew that after the second match. I sure didn't. I didn't know that. But this is a unique audience that we're all dealing with. And, I'm one of them. I'm a fan, just like you are. But, boy, the audience is sometimes hard to strategize for.
With Daniel Bryan, do you think he's had his last WWE World Heavyweight Championship reign?
No. Heck no. As long as he stays popular and he's healthy to go out and do what he does, he's so good in the ring that, you know, you got to utilize him, considering that I still think WWE is going through somewhat of a transitional period where a lot of newer guys are getting chances at the upper part of their roster for a longer period of time. And they've opened the door for guys to come in and make that impact. You scratch your head on some guys. You know, Dolph Ziggler should probably be up higher on the card. You wonder when they're going to pull the trigger on Sandow because at least Sandow would be a good to excellent middle of the card baby face. And maybe upper semi main type guy. And who knows? He may get over to become a main event fella. Heck, I don't know. But you wonder about some of those decisions. But you hope that there's a long term plan that those guys are figured in somehow, some way. But it's a tough tough period right now. But I think Daniel Bryant, you can't get too many Daniel Bryants in your locker room. And God knows he can work with anybody. And so I think he's good. As long as he's healthy, he's good. And I think the fans are going to always have an emotional attachment to him. It's just basic human nature. He's the underdog. You know, he's not has the biggest muscles and biceps, and he's not 6'2 or 3, but he's more average guy. The only thing that's extraordinary about him is his facial hair. I mean, really, he's, and I don't mean that in a negative way, because I'm one of his biggest fans. I love his work, and I have for a long time, long before he came to WWE, but, you know, he's not an extraordinary looking individual. He goes out, he's an old school guy that goes out there and just outworks people, and he's really, really good at what he does bell to bell, for sure. So I don't think he's done at all.
I mean, WrestleMania, there's only so much space on the card, obviously. Does Goldust Stardust crack that WrestleMania lineup?
Well, we'll find out pretty much going forward on television. You know, I don't know that they get their blow off moment at WrestleMania. If WWE has distinguishable plans for Cody, and I guess I'm not supposed to call him Cody because he seemingly gets upset when people do that.
Right.
Which is part of the gimmick. If they have significant plans for Cody to roll this Stardust character, then I would say WrestleMania would be the place for that to be blown off and give it a little bit more sizzle for Cody. This angle with Dustin is all about Cody, as it should be. I mean, he's young, and he's got his best years ahead of him, and Dustin has had, you know, a lot of bumps in that body, and he still does a hell of a good job. He's the kind of guy that you always want around, because when you bring in whether it be a baby face or a heel from NXT, and they can work with Dustin, they'll get better. That's the key. That's like getting a Rhino down there involved or other guys. You can't get better working with guys with the same skill set or less than you. It's just not going to work. So if the WWE has plans for Cody moving up, then yes, I think that they'll have their blow off at WrestleMania. If WWE is not ready to put Cody in that role at this time, then they might blow it off on Raw where there's a bigger audience.
And Sting and Triple H, I mean, they did the big setup for that, obviously, and a big theme. It kind of surprised me. I thought they would touch on it. I didn't think it would be as much of a theme as it is the WCW versus WWE approach. And it's kind of odd because Triple H is the heel and he's representing WWE. Do you feel like this sticks, or are they setting it up so that Sting has to come out and set the record straight as to what this is really all about?
I'm not I'd rather see a more personal angle, more personal issue than representing the companies, a defunct company that the other company owns the intellectual property of. It seems like it's not quite strong enough motivation. I think Sting's got to reveal something and say something, and then Triple H has got to say, okay, oh, you want to be, I'll be straight with you. Here's the deal. I never liked you. When I was in WCW at one time, and he was. And, you know, you were the big dog and whatever. And say whatever heels would say. You embellish. And you bitch and you moan. That's what heels do. That's what he should do. So I think that I heard that WCW versus WWE thing on the show, and it kind of took me aback. So I don't know if that's good or bad, because I paid attention to it. But I would think that there could be something else that would give this thing even more of a solid personal issue foundation than I'm upholding the honor of WWE or I'm upholding the honor of WCW situation.
Are we at that point where it's worth blowing off the mystique of Silent Sting to have him kind of change the course a little bit?
Well, you know, the funny part about that, Sting was silent for a portion of years in WCW. for most of his tenure in TNA, was he wasn't silent, was he?
No, no. And he actually improved quite a bit in TNA.
Yeah, I thought that his promos in TNA were fine. I mean, worked for me. But the issue of I've never been into that silent Sting thing. I don't know how that. I don't know. That's not my deal. I'm over the mystique aspect of that. I think he's got to communicate. No different than the Undertaker's got to communicate about Bray Wyatt if they're going to do it. What's he going to do? Send a text or a tweet or open a Twitter account? He's got to make a statement. And obviously the most impactful way to do it would be in person. Whether that happens or not, well, time will tell, because I don't have any idea. I don't even know how Mark's feeling. I hope he's feeling great, but, I'm not around those guys much, so I don't talk to them as often as I should, which is one of the bad things about getting out of the rigor. I think that's what a lot of people in my position or ex-wrestlers, they miss the most about being in the business is that day-to-day. It's like a ball player. What do you miss most about the game? Well, the locker room, my teammates. Well, it's the same thing here. You miss guys that you see and you'd like to visit with and enjoy their company. You miss those guys. But that's the way it works. So I think Sting's got to talk, and I don't even foresee that to be an issue. I don't look at him as silent Sting. I just look at him as being mysterious Sting who hasn't said anything yet, but he will. And I think that if they position it correctly, he can say the right things to really make this angle. Okay, now I get it. Now I'm more interested now. So that kind of thing. So I got to believe he's going to talk at some point. But you can't be silent between now and the end of March, I don't think, but maybe I'm wrong.
Do you see this as one and done for Sting, or is he back next year?
No, I don't see him more. I don't see I don't know. I know when I had him on my podcast several months ago, people should go back and listen to that podcast. They'll get a lot better feel for his mindset of what he wants to do. Because at that time, I had him on. I think WWE had been romancing him a little bit, but they hadn't made a deal yet. But he was very open and honest about what he wanted to do. So that was to have one more match at WrestleMania, have one more match and it be at WrestleMania. He wanted to work that. He wanted to be able to say that he had that quote unquote WrestleMania moment, or maybe better said, the WrestleMania experience that a lot of guys long for. And I don't blame him. As a broadcaster, it was one of the ultimate thrills I ever had was broadcasting WrestleManias. There's just nothing special about it. So, but I don't see him at this stage of his game. I see him being affiliated with WWE, but I don't see him as having a significant amount of matches. I would, if I had to give you an answer, I'd say this is it. He'll have one match and one and done. But there may be reason to have a return at SummerSlam. I don't know. Who knows? But I would say it's one and done for him.
I know people are already looking ahead going, he's a Texas guy. Taker's a Texas guy. Do they do this again next year in Texas? If they had that mapped out, okay. But I just don't know, Jim. I would think if that were in the cards, like I say, unless they had a two-year plan, wouldn't you do that this year if you were uncertain about Sting if Taker wanted that match?
Well, yeah, you could. I don't know. I mean, Sting's motivation seemed to me to be the streak. And the characters are both dark. And Sting's character had become dark. Undertaker's character had always been, with the exception of the biker.
Yeah, American Badass and all that.
American Badass was not, it was badass, but it wasn't mysterious, macabre, dark. I think the streak had a lot to do with that. situation, and he was more than happy to contribute to being a victim of the streak if that would have occurred. You know, there's misconception that people think that all the guys want to have their last match, and they got to, you know, and the grandeur of going over and being carried out on the shoulders of their peers and all that. And maybe at one time it was that way, but I think that's changed a lot in the last generation or two. So how do you know even next year, you know, Sting's going to be another year older, he'll be in his 50s, Undertaker is will be another year older, and, you know, I don't know, I just don't see the match ever happening.
Right. Are you surprised Taker's back this year, given the way things went down last year? Do you feel like maybe the concussion actually played a part in that, where he just didn't want to go out with that particular match?
I am, well, until they sign it and they make it real, I mean, I'm assuming you can't challenge The Undertaker and him not accept the challenge. So I'm assuming that all the I's have been dotted and the T's have been crossed, because you can't have the alleged heel in Bray Wyatt make the challenge to one of the biggest names, if not arguably the biggest name over the long haul, that's been a WWE person, than The Undertaker. You got to protect The Undertaker's image.
Right.
So if the babyface is challenged, you've got to get it. He's got to accept. The babyface has to accept. So I'm a little surprised that he's but again, I haven't talked to him. You know, we text during football season, and we talk football. And I'll kid him about the Longhorns, and he'll kid me about the Sooners. And then we have a lot of the text messaging the week of the game. But, you know, I'm not even aware of how he's feeling, you know, structurally. How are you? I don't know if he's had surgeries this year, or when's the last time he had a surgery. I mean, the guy's been put back together multiple times. And the things he did at 6'9 and 300 are like a – it reminds me of when Magic Johnson was a playing point guard at 6'9. It was like people couldn't believe it. He's too big to be playing point guard. He's not supposed to be that quick. He's not supposed to have that good of hand and eye coordination, that good of floor general, blah, blah, blah. But Undertaker sacrificed himself. He did the big bumps, the over the tops, the dives over the top rope, all those things, man. He's done things that really he probably took some years off his career by the effort that he worked, which is admirable, but now he's paying the price. So I'm a little surprised he's coming back this year, but I could very easily see WrestleMania 32 being built around him in a, to a large sense, if it's his Hall of Fame retirement weekend. I would certainly give that strong consideration if I were WWE, because you've got all these generations of fans that have made emotional attachments to The Undertaker, and to be able to see his last match and have I wouldn't want to say the weekend of The Walking Dead, because that'd be a lawsuit, but you know what I mean? Something that would be thematically sound.
The Last Ride.
Yeah, Last Ride, there you go. So something like that. It's like Cowboy Bill Watts' Last Stampede, except on a much larger scale, obviously. But, you know, you build this for what it is. And I think that he's the kind of guy that, much like Shawn Michaels, that when they say they're done, they're done. And I would expect that he would honor his, this is my last match, and it would be his last match. Now, but he'll always be affiliated with WWE in some shape, form, or fashion, I'm assuming. But I just don't see him having a bunch more matches. And if he gets through this year, which he should be able to get through well with Bray Wyatt, and it'll give Wyatt a great rub, and the promotion will be great. Being in the same graphic with The Undertaker is great for Bray Wyatt. He couldn't ask for a better booking. If I were Bray Wyatt, I'd be counting my blessings on that one. So then you look at next year, if you're going to try to sell 100,000 tickets or thereabouts, you got to have something really, really extraordinary, a once-in-a-lifetime event. And one way to have that once-in-a-lifetime event is to have The Undertaker go out. He's done. this is it. Win, lose, or draw, this is the last time you're going to see me in the ring as a wrestler. So that's what I'd do. I'd give it a great deal of consideration. If I was in creative, I would give someone in upper management the opportunity to talk me out of that idea and tell me why it's not good.
Last year you were at at the Hall of Fame with Steve Austin. Are you going back this year?
Don't know. No plans at the moment to go. That could change. The nice thing about we'll be done with our show at 3 o'clock there, and then, you know, you get out of there, say, 4, trying to make sure everybody's happy and everything's done you need to do. I don't know. I always enjoy going to the Hall of Fame. Last year, it was WWE wanted Steve to go, and he asked me if we were going. I said, I think we are, and he said, well, I'll get our seats together. I said, that'd be great. So I had no idea they were going to be in the front row, but I don't know if we're going to go. I had fun. I've always enjoyed it. I know that we're not going to be there for WrestleMania. I'm not going to go to WrestleMania because I'm coming back and watching it. I'm leaving early so I get back in time to watch it on the WWE Network because I'm recording a podcast the next day reviewing WrestleMania. So I need to be home. I don't need to be traveling on my recording day. There's no room for error on that deal, and I don't trust the airlines.
I know you're in Oklahoma, obviously, and I believe you go to AT&T Stadium. I mean, is that one, you know, podcast schedule aside, I mean, is there something about 32 where you have a little bit more desire to see that one in person?
Well, it's geographically more friendly. I drive down there.
True, yeah.
My house to Dallas, 2.5 hours, so it's an easy drive. Yeah, that would interest me more because the worst case scenario would be I could drive home after the event, or spend the night and drive home the next morning. Point being is I can get back, it won't affect the podcast situation with the geography like it is, but going to the WrestleMania event in California and trying to get out of there that night is challenging. I'm not a big red-eye guy, and it's just the travel and the podcast and all that stuff coming together. I'm not going to go out of defiance at WrestleMania 32-31 or out of anger. It makes the things a little easier to get home and get settled, watch the show, and go do my podcast the next day. You and I have done that before. We reviewed a pay-per-view.
Sure did.
We'll do it again, hopefully.
Anytime. News of the weekend, the kind of surprising Friday night news dump, WWE out of nowhere responds to CM Punk's claims of having a baseball-sized growth on his waistline area, putting out the close-up video of Punk's behind the entire video to show that there's no such growth there, that size at least. Are you surprised that, I mean, it just felt like everything had been said and done. It was over, you know, other than I totally understand the physician, Chris Amon, filing his lawsuit. I just figured, okay, they'll work that out. He's trying to restore his reputation or feels he was damaged, whatever the case may be. They'll work it out. But I personally was surprised in that WWE got involved and lashed out the way they did. It seemed like both sides had moved on.
I thought they had too. I was, as you, surprised that they pursued this. Obviously, like you, I don't know all the details of the litigious aspects of this matter. I know Dr. Amon he's treated me. I've always thought he did a good job. He certainly did in my case. He's got great credentials, and I think that he's, like you said, he thinks he's been what was the word, besmirched, damaged?
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be, and so I don't know the backstory. I don't know. I know we all know why. We know what's going on, but the motivation to get all this done. I mean, did it come from Dr. Amen? Did it come from WWE? Did it come from the advice of counsel? Who knows? I have no idea. And I honestly, did you look at the video of that?
I did.
See, I haven't even looked at the video of it, so I'm not as up with it as you are. What did you learn from watching the video?
If there's a baseball-sized growth under there, there's no sign of it. I just kind of took it as maybe he misremembered, maybe he was embellishing, getting worked, you know, caught up in the moment as he's venting about this situation, embellish the size of it. Maybe you can't see it. Maybe it felt that way to him, but it was visibly wasn't like that. You know, I mean, I guess it just depends on your definition of baseball size growth. Is he saying it protruded out the size of a baseball, or is he kind of the feel of it about, you know, the lump itself, not round baseball size, but about, you know, that width or something like that? And I'm just not sure. Just looking at it, I didn't come away. I just kind of felt like, okay, there's not. I get what WWE, the message you're trying to send, and it's going to win over some of the people who want to side with WWE. I don't even feel like you need to take sides on this, but there are going to be some who do. And then I think Punk has the easy comeback. He has the surgical scar that he can show. He has the physician, the other physician in Florida, assuming, you know, Punk's story is valid. I guess the thing that surprised me most, Jim, is that they put it out Friday night, I think about 7 o'clock our time, Central Time. I just say, if you're going to do it, own it. Don't throw it out there in the Friday night news dump.
That's interesting. Well, you know, I just don't know my synopsis of it is much like yours. I thought that ship had sailed. I thought they were done with it. And everybody, they meaning all parties. I mean, you know, Punk's moved on, and he's immersed in MMA training, preparing for his first UFC fight. WWE's up to their belly button and preparing for WrestleMania. So I just thought that, I hadn't even thought about it, to be honest with you. I hadn't thought about it one time, any other repercussions in this matter. So, surprise is, I guess, the best way. I was very surprised that it came about, and I don't know who, I don't know how at the end of the day, I know you got to do things sometimes from a legal standpoint, but at the end of the day, I wonder who's really going to, who the light's going to be shining on, who's going to win. Is there a winner? Can you even have a winner in this situation?
I don't think you can. No. I think you've pronounced it Dr. Amon. I've always pronounced it Amon, so I assume you know better than I do. I think, obviously, he can try to restore his name, get some monetary damages, but as far as WWE against CM Punk directly, no, I thought people had moved on, both of you need or not.
Yeah.
Unless it's just a lousy show and people are bored, you don't hear the CM Punk chants anymore.
No, you don't. You don't. I think people are moving on, and I think that's just a sign of the times that they're going to continue to move on. You know, you'll get it in Chicago, that kind of thing. But I think that by and large, I certainly have moved on. I mean, I'm a lot more interested in how CM Punk's training is going in Milwaukee with Duke Rufus than I am with this legal stuff. And I'm a lot more interested in what WWE is going to do, storytelling wise, to build momentum going into WrestleMania than I am, legal briefs and legal ease and stuff like that. But I've kind of always been that way. But I guess the key word is surprised. Surprised that it's the legal stuff has reared its ugly head and here we go again. I read somewhere where somebody said they didn't think it even would ever go to court. And
Like an out of court settlement kind of thing.
Yeah, I didn't have that feeling. I don't see Punk as a guy that's going to throw his hands up.
No, and just listening to his podcast, you know, the podcast in question with Cabana, he seemed very confident in his legal representation.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, that's what judges and lawyers do. I know the people that will make. I don't know if Amon will get any money out of it. I don't know if Punk will have to pay any money. I don't know if Punk will countersue and he'll make money. But we know one thing: the lawyers involved will make money.
Well, of course, yeah. I feel for Cabana.
I do too. I don't. You know, I hate to see anybody get. But it's just that's the risk you run when you get into a very, a very hot topic. That's the risk you run when you're declaring things. So, I was so uninterested in at the end of the day. I didn't even listen to the podcast. And I've been on Colt's podcast. I mean, he's a nice kid, and I still don't understand why he's not working in a bigger company if he chooses to. He may be doing so well independently he doesn't need to anymore. But he's a good talent in a lot of ways. But I hope things work out good for everybody involved. But I never even listened to the podcast. I had moved on when Punk made his comments and he had declared he was done. I just said, cool, he's done, and I moved on. And I moved on quicker than some of his fans did.
Right.
You know, well, the thing about it is that at some point in our lives, we have to understand that you don't spend too much of your time and stress and anxiety and the angst of worrying about things that you cannot affect in any shape, form, or fashion. And I was in a position where, you know, hey, I like CM Punk. He's been incommunicado to most people in wrestling. I'm sure there's a handful of people that still talk to him, his inner circle guys, maybe Heyman. I don't know. But I sent him text messages in support of him, and he just, I've not heard back from him, and I left him a few messages just to see how he's doing. I didn't even want to get him on the podcast. I wasn't talking about that. I did, but then I said, okay, you're going to do Colt's podcast. That's cool. Don't blame him, but I still hope you're doing well. And, you know, but that's the wrestling business again. You know, you just your relationships while you're immersed in it are in one place in your life, and then once you are detached from those your environment, the relationships wane quickly and consistently. And it's been that way since I remember getting in the business and a guy told me, if you have five friends and get out of wrestling, you'll be lucky. Five wrestling friends.
Wow.
And quite frankly, you ask some of your guys you have on your podcast and your radio, your audio, or ask some of the guys you talk to, ask them if they got more than five great friends after they left wrestling. See what the answer you get. I'm sounding morbid. And when I heard it for the first time, I said, God, that's awful negative. Geez, hope I'm not like that when I get out old. So we're down to 63. I've been 40 years in the business, maybe a little more. But it is that way. You can count on one hand. And it's not woe is me. It's just the way that it is. You're used to traveling together, being at the same place, your TV every week, and your 51 weeks a year, and you're around them, and all this stuff. And then the pay-per-views, and office visits, when I was at EVP of Talent Relations. You're around your all the time, and which I love doing. But now, that part of my life is empty. I don't have that locker room camaraderie that I used to have. And that, as a player, former player, quote-unquote, that's what you miss the most when you leave the wrestling business, is the locker room, because now you're back in that community of crazy personalities that you enjoy being around.
One of the friendships you did keep over the years, though, Danny Hodge, with WrestleMania 32 being in Texas, I know you've pushed for him in the past to get in. Are you any more optimistic? I mean, Texas is, it's tough because, I mean, I can come up with a list of probably 10 guys off the top of my head who have Texas roots, but do you think next year could be the year for Danny Hodge?
I'd love it because he's not getting any younger, and if Danny Hodge doesn't belong in any Hall of Fame that has wrestling involved in it, then I'm a figment of my own imagination. I don't think you can have a legitimate Hall of Fame without Danny Hodge being a part of it, simply because of his amazing career as an amateur, his long career as a pro. You know, he, for decades, Hodge and Luthez were the two American gods that went to Japan. And he just had a, unfortunately, he was before the really the advent of national cable, really getting the proliferation of that. A lot of people never saw him work, never knew anything about him. Never knew about the two Olympic Games he went to, or the winning the Golden Gloves boxing title, and almost going to a third Olympics in boxing. But you know, I would love to see him inducted while he's still able to get up there and say thank you. He's a wonderful man, and I think just how does he not end? That's what is. Bewildering to me. He's in a lot of halls of fame, but he's not in WWE, which I think, you know, again, he was a smaller guy in a regional territory, not on national television, and a lot of fans of today's ilk wouldn't have a clue who he is. You know, so I don't know. The odds are against it, I would say, because it hasn't happened yet. But Texas would be a good spot because, see, for him, that'd be an easy drive. He wouldn't even have to go to the airport. He could drive to Dallas. Piece of cake. But we'll see. I'll keep my fingers crossed for him, and I'm sure I'll do my share of politicking on my sources of Twitter and my website and so forth, podcast. But I say it's a long shot, and I say that hopefully I'm really wrong that he's in. You know, because you got the Freebirds are going to go in, you would think.
Taker, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Taker. If you do the Taker deal, he'd be the headliner, and then he'd just back it off from there.
Well, so, I mean, it could be Hanson, Stan Hanson. I mean, there's just so many people. Texas is so loaded.
Yeah, Bruiser Brody.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing about it is that you're going to want – the goal has always been when we were doing the Hall – I was involved in that Hall of Fame thing – you want to make sure you got more inductees that are breathing than are posthumous.
Sure.
And that sounds morbid, but you know you don't want a lot of posthumous inductees. That's why I wonder if Ray Stevens is going to get in this year with him passing away, and Macho Man also passed away. So you know we'll see how that works out, but. I'm pulling for Hodge. You know, he's absolutely deserving, and for many reasons, and I think most people would agree with that have been around the business for very long. It's just that you got people helping make decisions or suggestions or whatever, and they use a different criteria than I'm using. And I'm not saying their criteria is wrong. It's just different than mine. And if WWE is truly going to be the gatekeeper of these legends, you know, like Bern Gagne and others. Nick Bockwinkel's in. Nick Bockwinkel went in my class in 07. Then a guy like Danny Hodge certainly would merit same honor, in my view.
Absolutely. Just a couple more before we let you get going here, Jim. Anything new with you and New Japan, Global Force Wrestling? You obviously called the January 4th Dome Show. Is there anything new to report? Are you guys actively discussing future possibilities?
I haven't. I kept in touch with Jeff Jarrett, and we're both easy to find. And he knows that I had a great time there in Tokyo, and I enjoy the New Japan product. So he knows I'm interested. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see. I just don't know what the status is of the next Global Force event that they're going to promote. You know, I know that Jeff had some interest in, he's got a good relationship with AAA, and so I don't know what that means or where that could go. But we haven't had any serious discussions on the next one, you know, the next big next event, because I don't think he knows what the next event's going to be. At least if he does, he's not talking, and he's not ready to divulge that information. But he knows that I'm interested in participating if he does another one. And we'll just wait and see. I had a blast. I think I'll get better this time because I got familiar with the talents, and I stayed engaged in New Japan since I did their show on January 4th. So I think the broadcast would be better. It was challenging over there. The travel. We got there on Friday night. We had an all day Saturday deal and a Saturday night function, and then Sunday, and then we left Monday. I mean, it was nonstop, bang bang bang, and it was
for your 8-hour layover.
Yeah, Detroit. I think about 6-hour layover. It was way too long. Then another 2-hour flight home. So that the day from the time I got on a plane in Tokyo till I got to walk to my front door was like 21 or 22 hours. So it's a long haul. It's challenging travel. But I did have fun. I enjoyed working with Matt Striker. I call him he's the Eddie Haskell of wrestling announcers.
Right.
But he's showing your toes. But we had fun, and he was well prepared, which I respect and appreciated. This New Japan thing has got some good young talents, and if they continue to keep booking like they're booking, which is just logical and straightforward, they're more concerned, and I wholeheartedly agree with this. I'll give you an example. Years ago when Watts would book a big show and he's going to blow it off on Thanksgiving night in the Superdome, he'd have a start date for the storyline, and he would have obviously the blow-off date. Well, back in the heyday, more often than not, one half of that match was Junkyard Dog, because he was the biggest star in territory, the biggest babyface, biggest hero, fan favorite, blah, blah, blah. Well, you knew as a fan, you're going to do this big, huge build-up, and a lot of weeks you're going to get heat on the dog. So it's not unpredictable to say that, well, I know Dog's not going to lose the big match in the Superdome. You were right, sir. He isn't. Because the right thing to do would be to put him over after the program that you've run. So with that said, Watts' idea was more often than not to do what was right for business, not what was surprising for business. So, and I think there's somewhere along the way, I don't think this is a WWE deal whatsoever, but there's every promotion is jonesing for the next big, we got you. What a surprise. And when they shoot something and it's pre-recorded, it's online in a matter of minutes. So how big a surprise is it? About the only time you can surprise somebody is on Monday nights on Raw or on a pay-per-view that's live. So, I don't know, man. I'm a big believer in doing what's good for the business, and it doesn't necessarily be how can we swerve the audience? How can we surprise them? And I know that there have been people that have been writers and creative people and creative types and even bookers, but I don't know that the rule of booker even exists anymore. So to any major degree, maybe some places would argue that point, and that's cool. I get it. But I don't know. I think that the right thing to do is more important. Logic is not bad. Don't be afraid of using logic, even if you think it makes your product a little bit predictable. Because if you look back on the days and day and times, and they had a big program, even when you were a kid in the AWA and had a blow off at the in St. Paul or somewhere, and it was burning somebody, and that was the final match. Guess who's winning?
Right,
Bill
right.
Burn. Yeah. Bill Burn, right?
Of course.
And, but it's the right thing to do. You have a happy ending. You make the audience content, and it's a different deal. Now, you may not have the percentage of the audience that are babyface fans as they were when you were young or when I was young. I can't imagine going to a wrestling show, even when I was in my early 20s and I was in the business, and hearing fans cheering for the heels. And now it's commonplace because I think that a lot of fans just enjoy the defiance and kind of being a part of the process a little bit. Or maybe society, at least societal changes have occurred that have gone unnoticed by me where it's cool to like villains.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a show like Sons of Anarchy, a perfect example. I mean, Breaking Bad. And, you know, not everyone, but I don't want to get into spoilers, but not everyone was siding with Walter White by the end of that series or anything. But certainly along the way, people were, and some of the actions, you know, that he took were reprehensible. And there's plenty of other examples. I do have, before I ask you the final question, one quick one for you. If Matt Stryker is the Eddie Haskell, in your opinion, of the broadcasting, does that make Scott D'Amore the Lumpy Rutherford?
I think that's perfect.
All right, there we go. The last question comes from a .NET member, Efren, and he writes, I'm really concerned over the fact that during the Bad News Barrett match, the announcers basically did everything but call the match. And he said, it seems to me they are saying, look at the action and talk as little about it as possible. Did they ever tell you to start plugging everything but the match when you were calling for WWE?
No, it didn't.
So, I mean, do you think it's a new trend that maybe they are being encouraged, or is this just that's the way they're calling it?
Man, it's hard to say. I know that Vince has a definitive way he wants the stories explained and presented, more storytelling, less older school pro wrestling type play-by-play, more storytelling and what you're hearing now, obviously, on their show or their shows. So, but how much the guys look, if you know what your producer's going to tell you and you know what's going to keep you from getting crossways, then you're going to take that road. You're going to go down that storytelling road. And left of their own devices, it's very easy if all three guys are telling stories and no one's documenting false finishes or whatever, it's very easy for that whole presentation to be kind of a disconnect. So I don't know if it's Vince giving them this information or if it's just how the announcers are assimilating all their information and the style today. I don't know. I've said this many times, and I believe it. And I'm honest about it. I don't know that I would be nearly as effective calling Raw today as I was in the Attitude Era or in the little post-Attitude Era, simply because it's a different product with a different presentation, a different tone and tenor, and I think it's better suited for Michael Cole than it is for me. And I am very honest about that. When Lawler had his heart attack, and I filled in for a few weeks, the amount of information that Michael Cole is obligated to disseminate is frightening. And you have to be a very, very well organized, intelligent, studious human being to sit in that chair in today's world. And I don't know that I would have the skill set or the patience to do what he does. And I'm just being very, very truthful with you. If it were me, I would go back to still provide. You got to, some of the information you got to provide, but a lot of it's just timing. You know, it's not a matter of promoting Twitter. It's a matter of when you promote Twitter. Not a matter of saying what's still to come. It's a matter of what you're seeing in the ring when you get. somebody's got somebody in a headlock, it's a good time to stay here and still to come. But when you got movement and people are trying to process what their brain is telling them that they're seeing and they're hearing about something that's coming up later tonight, something's going to be left behind. It's just, you know, it's just natural. It's just, I don't want to say physics, but it's just, unless you don't have sight, then it's a whole different ballgame. Can you imagine not having sight and listening to storytelling while you're hearing all this, as the oohs and ahs and the slams and the, all this stuff? So I don't know what's the end game on that, but I do know that the style has changed a great deal, where storytelling is more in vogue on those Raw and SmackDown. But then you listen to NXT, and it's a different presentation. At least I think so.
It is, yeah.
And here's the irony of that. The guy that deserves probably more credit than anybody for how well the announcers are doing or how the announcers that have been called up are doing, like Corey Graves, and I see his face. I can't think of his.
Jason Elmer?
No, the Alex Riley.
Oh, sure.
I think Alex Riley does a nice job on, and if he focused on that, that was his gig full time, I think he'd get really, really good at it. But they have a different presentation at NXT. But Michael Cole's the guy that prepares, that works with the announcers. And he does a hell of a good job. I mean, obviously, they sound good. They're prepared. They tell good stories, and they're not what you hear on Monday nights. And I'm not knocking the Monday night guys whatsoever. They have a set of rules. They're on a different journey than those guys are in NXT. It's a different ballgame. But I like the NXT presentation. I think they do a nice job. But boy, the announcing in general has gotten more and more challenging because in some brands, the talent works so fast and they sell so little that there's really no time for the announcers to get the information in to help get the talent over. And that's what I don't understand. I've talked to a lot of talents about that. And I talked to a bunch of those guys over in Tokyo. We were talking to Shooting the Breeze about philosophy, and they asked me questions. I said, look, I'll give you an answer. You may not agree with it, but if you're working so fast, the announcers can't put over your sell and how tough you are for standing it or whatever, you're cheating yourself, and you're doing too many moves. So maybe you should, take a few things out and sell a little bit longer when it's applicable. Don't sell like you're a dead man if a guy, you know, slaps you in the face. But you got to learn to sell better. You got to learn to sell more consistently. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. It all comes to one package. That's what I'm saying, Jason. The selling is something that the announcers use as a tool to help get the talent over. If you think about it, you get the guy over that caused the sell, and you get the guy over that's doing the selling. It just depends on your choice of words. So that's how I look at it. But I just think that it's a different style. I like the NXT style a little better than the storytelling style. But to say that WWE is the only company that has issues, and I talked to Kevin Kelly on the podcast last week. You know, he and Steve Corino could do even a better job than they do if their talent would slow down a little bit.
Sure.
Let's slow down a little bit, just a little bit. You don't need to do three hurricane runners. I mean, do one. Or do one and then miss on the second or whatever. But point being is that you just can't out sensationalize yourself. You got to give the announcers time to put you over, and that's what they're there for, to put you over. And you don't give them any time. You're going, you know, you're the comedian that's asking joke number two before joke number one's laughter starts. You know, why the chicken cross the road? Hey, did you hear about the man and the duck walking to a bar? And wait a minute, hold on.
Right.
What's the punchline and all this stuff? So. My point, you don't sell, you're not giving the audience the punchline. But the announcing is, I think those guys at WWE do exactly as they're instructed to do and what the trend is. And I think that the guys at NXT are beholden to Michael Cole for his coaching. And it's funny what how he's coaching them up. They're doing a fundamental call down there, wouldn't you say?
I would. Maybe he's trying to protect his job. Going, oh, these guys will know. You know, we'll have them call it the old school way. They'll never be able to call it my way. I'm kidding.
No, no. I think he's giving them a foundation.
Right.
He's giving them a foundation of what you can work from. And so that's kind of where I see his role very much understated in the success of the announcing there in NXT. So, but the whole show predicts differently. It's funny how it's written. There's a lot of old school principles to it that are just fundamentally sound. That's all I'm saying. They're just very fundamentally sound. It's like Rusev cheating to win. Good call. He cheated to win. It's the first time that Lana got in the ring and was a distraction. And then the low blow. And then going back to the Rusev's finisher. Or the accolade, whatever he calls it.
Yeah.
So it's that whole process I liked. I endorsed that type of booking. The heels cheat to win. I don't understand why Rusev just didn't beat Cena clean. Because there's no heat in beating somebody clean if you're a villain. Some of they ought to go back and listen to my podcast with Bill Watts, and they'll get that education and that they'll get their doctorate in selling and psychology. Listening to Watts' podcast. Same thing for I got one coming up with Jim Cornette with a little bit of that on there too. Just here's why you do these things. Oh, okay, well, that makes sense. And you take them out, it doesn't. If you take something out of the soul of the business, if you don't follow the fundamentals.
And speaking of the podcast, look for Shane Hurricane Helms coming up on Wednesday. Terry Funk the next week. Melina will be stopping by. And then you reference Jim Cornette. That will be March 17th. All of those available at Podcast One. And, of course, Ringside, an afternoon with Jim Ross coming up Saturday, March 28th at the Rock Bar Theater in San Jose, California. Get your tickets at TicketWeb.com or at the Rock Bar Theater box office. VIP meet and greet, $65. And as Jim said, it's a 2-hour meet and greet, so and only 100 people, so you're not just going to be ushered in and out quickly. I definitely recommend that. But if the $20 price range is more in your budget, that is the general admission price, $20, and you can get those tickets at the door. Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for joining me again, and best of luck with the one-man show.
Okay, buddy. Good luck to you, too. Have a good week. Should be fun, I think, for guys like us that are kind of, you know, following the business in our own ways. I think the build of WrestleMania is going to be very intriguing. I'm very interested to see how hot WWE can get their brand in the next 5 weeks to deliver what I'm sure they want. I think that the makings of a good card exist. So it should be fun. And I appreciate you having me on, and I'm sure we'll do it again.
Sounds great, Jim.
Thanks, Jason.